Sandy Beach from Tampa, Florida.
Thank you, guys.
We have more agendas. More agendas are back on the table if you need them. Oh, do you want this table or no?
Let's try this. Huh?
Okay. All right.
There, that'll work, huh?
Is that going to work? Can we push it in a little?
You can push it in a little. That's about it. Okay. Well, I really want to thank all of you for inviting me out. And I know a lot of you, and I've been to L.A., Alcoholics Anonymous, quite a bit. And I love the AA out here. I just am delighted with it all. I'd like to start out with, I'd like to offer up a prayer to get this started. God, we miss you. We miss you so very much. We seem to have lost our way, and we're very lonely without you. We want to come home to you more than our hearts can bear. Thank you for our complete defeat. Thank you for the pain of the downward journey. Thank you for leading us to each other and to the path of seeking you. Please allow each of us this weekend to experience your presence and through that to show others how to know you. May we always be in the present moment with you. Amen. This will probably be a little bit different than what you've been used to. Many years ago, I decided that I would try and think up a weekend with talks and ideas that wasn't done in the traditional way of taking the big book and studying the steps or the traditions, but try to get to the real essence of our spiritual program, the spiritual journey, and so that's what we have. And the first lecture that's on the schedule is a title that I chose because it's a little bit different, Back to the Basics of Awakening. And I know whenever you hear the term Back to the Basics, you don't normally associate awakening with it. But I would submit to you that that is exactly what the basics are for, is to achieve the awakening that's in our 12th step, which says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of this program. And so I want to just focus on that during this talk. Now, people attending something like this fall into many different categories. There's some people here who've been around a long time. You're old-timers in AA. And maybe you're here to jumpstart, or maybe you're here because you want to take it a little further than you've been. Maybe there's some that are been having some problems, and they want to come out and see if they can get unwound from those problems and get back on track. And maybe there's new people who are coming here for the first time to experience something like a weekend with 140 other men who are trying to accomplish the same thing. And I would say that as a result of activities like this, there are people amongst us who will choose to become seekers to a higher degree than they have been. Whether they've been around 20 years or not, you may elect to do that. And when we do that, we change the priorities in our life and really try to put first things first, which is to get as close to God, your Creator, as you can get. And when people elect to do that, Very often the results are manifested in a rather short time, probably within 6 months or so. And you will see them in your home group, and I call them beacons. They just have a energy about them that is quite attractive. And when they share at meetings, you listen and you go, I never would have thought of it that way. That was really interesting, what Jim just said. And he probably said it in a very simple way. It was just a comment on a topic, and he just came up with two sentences, and it just left you with the feeling, that just said it all. You know what I mean? Do you know that feeling that you get when you hear something that is really on? And I think back when I had the chance to meet Chuck Chamberlain, and he was definitely a beacon, if not a lighthouse, in terms of having an energy about him that you just couldn't dismiss. You weren't sure what it was, but you knew it was there and it was pretty powerful. And I don't know why, but he took a liking to me in my early sobriety. I had about 15 years and invited me down to Laguna, and I got to sit in his chair and listen to him talk to other people. And I just was taking it all in. I'm just going, man, this is just amazing. And I felt wonderful, but I didn't know what he was talking about. You know what I mean? I just thought, this has to be good. I mean, just feel the energy in the room and just look at the man's face. This is just remarkable what I'm hearing. But then later on, when someone asked me what I heard, I said, well, it was great. It was just amazing. And so that happens. And it doesn't, and it happens in AA because something causes an individual to seek in a different way than they have been. And that happened to me probably about 20 years ago. And I think I got the idea from having met Chuck and then from looking at the 11th step, where in both the big book and the 12 and 12, it talks about prayer and meditation being an individual adventure. It suddenly isn't a we program anymore. This is one person is going to either engage in the prayer and meditation and the seeking, and encourages us that our libraries are full of books, there are many teachers. That suddenly you find that there is something happening that is, AA is the foundation, but this is, we're going to lift to some individual place so that we can understand and see the AA program from a different vantage point. And it'll be unique to you. But as you talk about it, your take on the program will be slightly different. And very often that take is very attractive. People want to hear more about it. Where did you get that idea? And you in turn can encourage others to go off on this journey. We don't have to. A lot of people do fine without it. The AA support system is very good. But I have some thoughts about the AA support system. And this is what it looks like. If you went back about 50 years ago in AA, in most small cities, and even some of the larger ones, there was only one meeting a week. Now imagine that, one meeting a week. How are you going to stay sober on one meeting a week? Well, you really look forward to the meeting. That's the first thing. You are really looking forward to that. And the second thing is, you might find a buddy that attends the meeting, and halfway through the meeting, meet him for coffee. But mostly, you prayed like hell. That's how you did it. You just prayed like hell. God, please help me get through. Only two more days to the meeting. I'm reading the book, and it's only two more days to the meeting. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. So, if we fast forward to today, there's hardly any place in this country where there's only one meeting a week. Matter of fact, we have a rather big smorgasbord of meetings. We got 5 a.m. meetings, 6 a.m. meetings, 12 noon meetings, 5 o'clock right after work meetings, 7 o'clock midnight meetings, men's meetings, women's meetings, gay meetings, couples meetings, discussion meetings, speaker meetings, picnics, retreats, conventions. We got pamphlets on everything. There's no subject that hasn't been covered. Except for old guys, and maybe they're going to come out with one for that. My point is that we have such a far-reaching support system, you don't have to hardly pray at all. You follow what I'm saying? You could have halfway livable sobriety on the support system itself. I go to the meetings, talk to other people, I'm involved in this, I'm involved in that. And that could be maintained for the rest of your life. And you could check out with 35 years of reasonably good sobriety. Now, Bill had a comment about good. And I think he quoted Lincoln when he said, good is the biggest enemy of the best that there is, because we're just comfortable enough to not change. Yeah, it really would probably be a good idea to push myself a little further, but I don't have to. I'm not in the crisis mode. And so that's why we can just stay there. And so things like this, people come to these things because they know inside of themselves that there's so much more. That we really aren't all the way home, like the opening prayer said. And we really do miss God. And we're going to do something about it tomorrow. And so on and so on. And so I thought about this, and I tried to come up with something that would address that, so that we're moving maybe beyond the conventional, to see where it takes us. And so when I come up with the idea of awakening, back to the basics of awakening, I started with this thought, and see what you think of it. The 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So we start out with the premise that awakening is the solution. That is the solution. If awakening is the solution, what was the problem that it addresses? And you know, you just go, I don't know. Unawakened. Sometimes they talk about being in a dream. Oh, you're going to awaken. St. Francis said, by dying, we awaken to life eternal. So what is this? What is it that awakening fixes? Now, my take on that would be this. Self-centeredness. We're self-centered in the extreme. And we're told that when we first arrive here. Alcohol, well, everybody's self-centered. But alcoholics do it in the extreme. And what I would call it is a self-centered trance. We're stuck in our own vision of the world, and we're not going to leave it because we honestly believe that we're seeing the real deal. But we're only seeing it from inside ourselves. And I would submit to you that if there's 140 guys here, there's going to be 140 different experiences this weekend, and we're all sitting in the same room. And some people are going to walk away going, that was a lot of fun. Some people are going to walk away saying, I like the old way better. But they're all going to be different. And so I really think that the 12 steps are designed to smash this self-centered concept of reality that we all have. And in preparing for this, the second lecture I came up with a title that I thought would appeal to everybody's ego, Contemplative AA. Everyone would go, yeah, Plato. I'm sort of like Plato. I'm glad I'm doing that. And when I did that, I went online. I was looking around. I came up with a paper that is back there that you can pick up at the end of the lecture. And there was a doctor who wrote a paper, Addiction, Meditation, and Contemplative Practice. And his name was Dr. Natcher. And he decided to disagree with all the other doctors on what addiction was. And he decided to approach it. What's that?
That's what you have back.
Oh, okay. He decided to approach it by acknowledging that there's a psychological factor, there's a social factor, there's a physical factor, but they're leaving out consciousness. They're leaving out the spiritual state of consciousness. And as he explored a way of explaining this, lo and behold, he came up with Dr. Carl Jung and Roland Hazard and the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. When, as you know, and it's in the paper, and at the end you can pick this paper up, and I think you'll find it fascinating, especially where he starts criticizing us a little bit. But he quotes Dr. Jung and Roland Hazard being there, and all the psychiatric treatment for a year is of no avail. And Roland gets drunk again and comes back and says, is there no hope for me? And he said, no, there's no hope. I can't do anything. But I've seen some recoveries from a spiritual or religious experience. Maybe you ought to go out and try one of those. And we all know the story that Roland went out and found the Oxford movement, had this spiritual experience, passed it on to Ebby, and Ebby passed it on to Bill, and Alcoholics Anonymous got started resolving the problem of alcoholism by changing the state of consciousness and going from, as Chuck called it, conscious separation from God to conscious contact with God. So our whole program is designed to enable us to have conscious contact, which changes our state of consciousness. And he quotes Dr. Jung in that letter to Bill that they publish in the Grapevine every so often. See if I can find it. Oh, here it is. What were Jung's recollection about his final meeting with Roland? What did he write in response to Bill Wilson's thank you note? Here are Jung's words. His craving for alcohol was the equivalent at a low level of the spiritual thirst for wholeness, expressed in medieval language, the union with God. And so his whole theory is that everyone is suffering from separation from God, only they don't diagnose it as that. We don't diagnose it. We didn't think we were drinking because we were separated from God. We thought we had a nervous breakdown and we couldn't fit in with society and everything was unfair and this is the only way to fix it. But underlying all of that was a dissatisfaction with life itself that we couldn't really put our finger on. Restless, irritable, and discontent. That can be diagnosed psychologically. It can be diagnosed many different ways. Why am I restless? Why am I irritable, discontent? Dr. Natcher and Dr. Young would say it's because you're too far away from God. And Alcoholics Anonymous came along and proved the case. Proved the case by being the only successful treatment of this spiritual disease, by having a program where steps are put together to enable an alcoholic to achieve this union with God. Anyway, he goes on to talk about this in general, and I'll do it from memory. He talks about how spiritual programs have come up in the past that were very effective, and as time goes along, they get diluted and lose their effectiveness. And then he points to AA, and he says, I see something similar in Alcoholics Anonymous. I see that back when the Oxford group was working and when AA first started, the emphasis on one person helping another one to have a spiritual awakening was rather intense, and that there were transformations of a greater magnitude than is common today. There's plenty of them today, but it isn't the vast majority of the people that have them. And as I look in my group, there's just lots of people who are happy just going to meetings and talking about the steps sometime, but who have missed the point that their entire problem is separation from God. And those of you that have read New Pair of Glasses, which is Chuck Chamberlain's retreat that they transcribed into a book, I guess it, most people have heard of it or have read it, I don't know. How many have heard of it, or almost everybody? All right, I'm in California after all. And one of the points that Chuck makes, one of the fundamental points in that whole weekend, and we all know it, but we never explore it. He makes the statement that there's only one problem that we have that includes all problems. And that problem is conscious separation. That in our consciousness, we exist separate from God. And the answer to that is conscious contact. So having said that, if that's true, then discussion meetings would be kind of boring, because someone would come there and say, well, my wife just left me, but I went back and improved my conscious contact with God, and I feel a lot better. Somebody else could say, well, I just lost my job, but I went back and improved my conscious contact with God, and I feel a lot better. So you'd hear the same damn answer from everyone. And that leaves us in a very uncreative position. And so knowing that, we are free to comment. Well, what I like to do when this happens, and we're coming up with our, what we think, I like to go running. I like to go. So in other words, we come up with, I go to a club and I listen to people handling problems. And I would say that 90% of the solutions leave God out. You follow what I'm saying? Isn't that odd that as spiritual as we are, our ego causes us to come up with solutions that leave God out? We could call it doing the legwork. I have to do the legwork. I have to do this. Well, God helps with the legwork. God would like to help us with every burden that we have. And there's just a tendency to not ask him. There's one of the great character defects that all of us have that sometimes isn't recognized as a character defect is self-sufficiency. I mean, self-sufficiency is so contra to spirituality. And yet, it becomes something that we feel is good. Now, it may be good in the material world, but over in this world that we're trying to live in and to evolve in, it's just a disaster. And one of the problems with spirituality is that it works. When you follow these steps and you work this, have a sponsor and takes you along, things get better. And you feel much better about yourself. You feel much better about the world. And you really are grateful to AA for this new outlook that you have on life. And it actually feels like you have been made stronger, and that you have been returned to a place where you really don't need help as much as when you were brand new. Do you all relate to that? Do you see how subtle that is, that you have the feeling, wow, I'm really grateful to God for putting me in a place where I don't need him anymore. And I want to express my gratitude to God for doing that. Which is a very sneaky way of easing God out. Ego, easing God out. And, of course, we know what happens. Within a short time, the world collapses because we are now handling everything on our own. And so self-sufficiency is just one of the tough things to fight off. Which is why it's fun to have close advisors, sponsors, that can tell us when we're getting self-sufficient. I think you're handling these things on your own too much. Let me see what I had extra here. Datcher makes this point, and I'd be curious in discussion later what some of you guys think about this. He suggests that because the individual pursuit of this union with our higher power isn't pursued far enough, we don't get the full relief from the pain of separation that we could have. And we come to the conclusion that seeking this is a lifetime job, and that without AA, we're going to fall by the wayside, and there's no such thing as an absolute perfect release from alcohol, even though Bill writes about it in the sixth step. And therefore, rather than being addicted to alcohol, we're addicted to AA. Which is a step in the right direction, but it is still shy of being totally connected with God. I felt that. I felt that this is my home, and I was connected more to AA than to God. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not criticizing it. I did it for years. But I'm saying if I stay there, I'm going to rely on that for the rest of my life instead of trying to become fully dependent on a higher power. And when you look at the essence of the sixth step, it is to abandon all self-reliance in all areas to become dependent on your higher power. So if you kind of said, well, what would the ideal program look like? You would desperately need AA when you and God when you got here. And after 20 years, you would need him even more because you will have turned over much more of your life until there's no area that you're managing. Now, that's not a normal thing to be talking about. There's no area that I'm managing. When that concept comes up, you remember the line in the 12 and 12, I'd be the hole in the donut. I would have no territory left. I would not be, you know, our ego and our life and our ideas constitute our kingdom. And that's where we live. We live in those ideas. And the idea of giving all them up to be guided by God is a little further than most of us even want to consider. And so we tend to settle as giving all them up to be guided by God is a little further than most of us even want to consider. And so we tend to settle, as Bill writes in the 12 and 12 in step 6, for as much perfection as will get us by. You follow what I'm saying? We don't realize we're doing that. We just are, that's what the other guys are doing. I'm happy doing this. And so you don't hear much talk about perfection. And I would submit to you that when Bill wrote the 12 and 12, as a matter of fact, in the letter, from 12, as a matter of fact, in the letter, he said that when AA started, the Oxford group and Akron and Cleveland wanted him to include the four absolutes that were part of the Oxford. And he said, oh, God, we got new drunks and tell them some absolute thing, driving them crazy trying to reach it. I don't think we should put it in there. And any of you that have been to Cleveland, you know they still print the pamphlet, the four absolutes, and it says AA on the back. That's how integrated they were. But later on he wrote, but I did incorporate them in the sixth step in the 12 and 12. And the sixth step starts talking about raising our eyes towards perfection. It's the first place that raising our eyes towards perfection. So you could actually make the statement that the big book talks about progress, not perfection, and the 12 and 12 talks about progress towards perfection. And so I know you say, well, nobody can be perfect. And that's a true statement, that nobody could possibly become perfect. But perfect help is available. And the only thing standing between that perfect help and getting it is I don't want it. I don't want that much God in my life. I don't want to turn everything over. And then you start down the list in the sixth step. We turned over our drinking 100%. All right, what about lust? 100%. Wouldn't it be fun to have 100% freedom from lust? Well, maybe 75. Maybe 75. What is 100% freedom from lust? Is that like you're dead? Well, it sounds too extreme. Does it sound extreme? Yeah. I think it sounds extreme. We can't go that far. Okay, how about greed? We just get rid of this thing of looking out for ourselves and wanting more and doing. Wouldn't it be fun to just have none of that? Yeah, but then I might not have any stuff. So I'd like to really cut down on greed. I really would. I'd really like to cut way the hell down on greed. So you can see what we're doing. You could do this with almost every character diva. How about gossip? Gossip, you know, Dr. Bob, that's a terrible thing in the Ruins AA group. It's an awful thing. It is awful. I condemn it. I think it's disgusting. And I don't ever want to originate gossip. Now, if somebody else started it, and I thought it was important that this side of the room know what that side of the room knows, I could serve as a conduit, a very neutral conduit, like a telephone line, simply allowing it to get over there. So we come up with the line in the 12 and 12, which says, we tend to settle for as much perfection as will get us by. I don't know if you remember that line. I really relate to that. You're a businessman. You could ask God to make you totally honest in all your dealings. Or you could try and have a reputation for being honest. Not being limited to being honest. Because once in a while, in order to stay alive in the business world, you have to, you know what I'm talking about. You got to deviate a little from the absolute. And so even there, we want to settle for less than. Less than. Meaning, I'm nervous about God taking care of me. That's what we're saying when we don't want to turn over these things. And that means I have to take care of myself. You see what happens? As soon as we back away from this perfect help, we're going to be the ones who are taking care of ourselves. And when we take care of ourselves, we have to have a plan. And this plan involves earning money, chasing women, retirement, whatever it involves, so that I will be taken care of. Now, God is perfectly willing to take care of you. And we go, yeah, I know that, but I think I'm going to stick with this plan that I have. And there's a tremendous reluctance to believe that God would take care of you. This is what we're trying to overcome. This is what I'm trying to talk about, and that's what I'm trying to overcome in myself. What is it inside of me that doesn't want to believe that God will take care of me? And I'm sure everyone here knows that, yeah, God probably would take care of me, but I don't want to put him to the test. I don't want to actually turn my life over. We've got a whole step of that. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. And then we take a look after 10 years and see how much we've turned over. We all turned over our drinking problem, or would be drunk. But how much resistance is there to this complete turnover? And that's what Nature was talking about, where we settle for a middle ground and miss out on a total awakening. Now, I've thought a lot about Bill Wilson's awakening. And I know historians could agree or disagree with me. But I think he had an experience that was rather monumental and that lasted him for his whole life. I think the results of that experience were with him all the way to the end. His being set free from alcohol and his obsession with helping every other alcoholic in the world were all part of that moment. And even in the instance in the Mayflower Hotel, where you all know that story, where he is debating whether to have a drink, and he's listening here, and he gets on the phone, and he's calling people, and he finally finds Dr. Bob, and he goes out and helps him. Part of me thinks that even if he wasn't able to make contact that day, he still would have stayed sober. I think his driving force was to find other people. And so I wrote an email to Dr. Natcher on his point that everybody becomes addicted to AA instead of having this total contact with a higher power. And in that email, I suggested to him that maybe he was missing something, that there were many people in AA that had this awakening, and as part of that awakening, they could not help but pass it on. It was part of their new nature. was to pass this on. And unless they were passing it on, they felt incomplete. They were like the Dead Sea, where all of God's grace is coming in, but none of it's going out. And that the real reason that they're at AA every day is to pass it on. That deep down, that's the real reason. And if we stop doing that, we'd start dying spiritually. We would start just becoming less and getting separated. It's such an integral part of spiritual awakening is the passing it on. And all of you that sponsor people know exactly what I'm talking about. This is the highlight of your life, is to watch someone else come into the light. And so I made the case to him that this is what is drawing a great number of people back, is to find new people to pass this on to, and not because they're terrified that they might take a drink that day, which is a big difference. Let me see. I'm tired, so I've got to rely on my notes. When Chuck talks about conscious separation is the only problem that we have, it sounds like he may be deviating from our program. Like, where does it say that? Where does it say that in the literature anywhere, that conscious separation is the only problem that we have? Well, it may not use those exact words, but separation is accomplished. Oh, thanks. There's only one way that we can be separated from God. That's to make up a story that we're separated from God. You follow what I'm saying? There's no one that's separated from God. That's, you know, God is part of everything. The fundamental idea of God is deep down inside of every one of us. There's no way to be exist as a separate being from God. And yet we all do. We all have that feeling that I exist separate from everyone. And I remember that sentence in the book, God is everything or is nothing. What was your choice to be? You remember that line? God either is or he isn't. God is everything or he's nothing. What was your choice to be? Well, I remember getting there. My sponsor said, well, what's your choice? So I knew that the answer that he wanted. And I said, well, God's everything. And he said, do you feel that? And I really got thinking about it. And I thought about the fact that God is the whole universe. There's all of these other galaxies. There's all of these things go on for light years and light years and light years. And that everything there is included in that. And then there's me. In addition to all of that, there's me. I felt like I existed in addition to everything in the universe. And I would submit that so do you. You're an individual entity, and your world is where you live as a separate entity. And what we call this in our big book, our old ideas, availed us nothing. And so I feel I'm not part of God. You feel you're not part of God. And it's very lonely. Because this world, which is composed of ideas, you're the only one in it. I'm the only one in mine. And it's great because you have control over it. There's nobody bothering you in there. There's no one telling you the world can't be that way. But in the final analysis, you're all by yourself. In the final analysis, everyone who lives in that world that we're talking about lives there by themselves. And Chuck was saying, we've got to find a way to get out of that world into conscious contact with God. And that's what his whole retreat was about, was to try and force us to focus on that instead of trying to improve the world that we created, which is what we do when we talk about, well, I need a little more money. I need a little bit of this. We're avoiding dealing with the fact that this world is separate from God. And so, how does this world, how do we get away from that world and establish contact with God? And I would suggest to you that right off the bat in the big book, there's a line that really describes this. And I'm not going to be able to quote it exactly, but other people has to be smashed. Does everybody remember that line? So they took an idea that is part of us. That's part of our world. The idea that I can drink, and I had it. Well, maybe I'll have warm vodka. Maybe I'll have just a beer in the morning and then lay off for a week and then go back to scotch. And then somehow, and that was me. I was the guy who lived that reality. And the big book says, well, that idea has to be smashed so that it doesn't exist anymore. And I would submit to you that this is what all the rest of the steps do, is they go after the ideas that we have to be smashed. And most of them, and we inventory all of this. And the interesting thing about the inventory is when we come to the part that says, what was your part in this? Do you remember that on the big book? There's the sexual inventory and the resentment inventory. And then you go through this happened, that happened. Well, what was your part? And generally, we need our sponsor's help to see that. You know what I mean? Like, well, maybe, yeah, okay, maybe, yeah. Maybe I was a little bit me. Maybe I did contribute a little bit to that situation. And as we see our part in it, we see that we had it wrong. That we had it wrong. And I remember the first time my sponsor said to me, you know, you're wrong. And I knew he had me. He walked me into a corner. I didn't see it coming. And he had me that this was wrong. And I said to him, well, Bill, you're right. He said, no, you're wrong. And I went, well, you're right, and I agree with you. He said, let me hear you say you're wrong. And it was very hard. I don't know about the first time you ever owned up to being wrong. I bet the words did not come easily through your mouth. Yes, I am wrong. I mean, it was a very great struggle to get the words I am wrong out. Do you remember how it felt when you finally let that wrong idea go? It was like getting a weight off your shoulder. It was a tremendous freedom to be wrong. You know something? I'm wrong about my cousin. I'm wrong about my father-in-law. And it's like, damn, feels good to be wrong. Because the idea I had was terrible. He was the son of a bitch and this and that. I am wrong. Well, we have a whole step about it. Not only do we get started in the fourth step, but we got a whole step, the tenth step, wrong again. Wrong again. And we don't waste time. When I'm wrong, promptly get up on the top of the banister. Hello, I want to announce I'm wrong again. Wrong again. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And I think this concept of being wrong is what Chuck was talking about with uncover, discover, discard. What else can I find inside of me that I'm wrong about that I can get rid of? And gone, gone. We get lighter and lighter. It turns out that the truth is every individual, and the truth gets revealed. Those are the words that Bill uses in our big book. More will be revealed. It intuitively occurred to me. So the truth exists inside of us, but it's being blocked out by wrong ideas. So as we dismantle the wrong ideas or the world that we've created out of these wrong ideas, the truth about ourselves, the truth about the real world, gets revealed. And it is a great sense of simplicity. The greatest difference that I feel from my old world to the present world, this world is so much more simple than the one when I first arrived here.